90.3 FM. Relax and enjoy.
Montreal. You are tuned to the Wednesday Morning After on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. We have a tight show for you today with two pre-recorded interviews from Arts and Culture and one from the Music Spot. The first interview is with Sarah Freeman from Penguin Random House Books with her latest work, Tides. The second interview is with Yid Life Crisis, a comedy team that will have you giggling about all things Yiddish. They don't even speak Yiddish. The music interview is with Johnny Blue. Johnny has some new work out to share. 8 a.m. brings Democracy Now!, 8:15 brings Weather, and after some more music, we'll visit the podcast called In the Shower with Taz and Marcus, where the question is, what makes brain freeze? After some music, we'll wrap up the show. Let's start the day off with some music.
Truth ain't always sweet. first time that I have been broken up with. It ain't the first time that it's raining in my heart. It is not new to mix fine rye with old style pilsner. I'm almost used to looking for another start. I always knew that finding love would not be easy. And I believe in searching high and searching low. Still, it's the first time that I feel like I am sinking. And them cool waters surely flow so fast below. So pull me out and take me home like it's the first time. And let me hold you tight and kiss you in the rain. There is no use in hanging on to old disasters. Because each time we drown, we learn to breathe again. Time, and I'm sure it ain't the last one. Life has a way of reestablishing its flow. But it's the first time that I'm choking underwater. And them cool currents surely drag you deep below. So pull me out and take me home like it's the first time. And let me hold you tight and kiss you in the rain. There is no use in hanging on to old disasters. Because each time we drown, we learn to breathe again. It ain't the first time, and I'm sure it ain't the last one. Life has a way of reestablishing its flow. But it's the first time that I'm choking underwater. And them cool currents surely drag you. It's the first time that I'm choking underwater. And them cool currents surely drag you deep below.
A Boston-based Canadian Montreal-born graduate of McGill and Columbia's MFA, Sarah Freeman was awarded the program's Enfield Prize for Best Short Fiction. She's repped by Anna Stein at Curtis Brown, whose client list includes superstars like Tara Westover, Educated, and Hanya Yanagihara, A Little Life. Tides, her debut novel, is a contemplative atmospheric novel about a woman who abandons her to family after a devastating loss, relocating to a bleak seaside village without resources or contacts, seeking to reaffirm the meaning in life. With us today, we have Sarah Freeman. Hi, Sarah, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Sheila.
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you came to be an author.
So my name is Sarah Freeman. I'm originally from Montreal, as you mentioned in your introduction, but I now live in Boston. Interestingly enough, I still kind of struggle to think of myself as an author, but I'm beginning to think of myself that way. But I can say that I started writing actually at McGill. My last semester there, I took a poetry workshop with a poet called Thomas Heiss. I think it was the only writing workshop that was, you know, offered that entire year. And I think it's there that I realized that I really loved the kind of workshop environment, that feeling of sharing your work with others and also doing this work on your own. I don't think I was a particularly good poet, but that was what kind of got me interested in writing and in seriously considering doing an MFA, although it would take me, you know, a few years to get to the MFA and to realize that I actually wanted to be a fiction writer.
What is your formal education?
I went to McGill. I studied history and Hispanic studies, and then a few years later did a three-year MFA in fiction at Columbia. But I think actually when I think of my education kind of as a writer, one of the biggest kind of formative experiences was while I was at the MFA, I also taught writing in the English department to kind of young 18-year-olds, essay writing. And that was its own formative experience and taught me a lot about what I intuited about writing but hadn't quite clarified to myself.
How did you become involved with Penguin Random House Books?
You know, it's a long road to the document on your computer to the publishing house when you are first starting off. So the first thing I did was I found my agent, Anna Stein, in the summer of 2020. And that felt kind of miraculous. This was during the beginning of the pandemic and everything was very slow. It took a long time to hear back from her. And once she had read the manuscript and kind of loved it and wanted to represent it, she sent it off quite quickly to a variety of publishers in Canada and in the US. Penguin Canada was one of them, and in particular, this little imprint, Hamish Hamilton. And the editor there, one of the editors there, Deborah Sun de la Cruz, was just really passionate about Tides. And I could sense that the book had really moved her. And that was what I wanted in an editor. And I've been very lucky because I've had these amazing editors who kind of took the book, you know, for what it was and really looked at it from the inside and helped me to make it, you know, the most itself it could be. So
where did you find the inspiration for your novel Tides?
Well, I'd like to say that it was like this one, you know, I had this one experience and then that's how it happened. But I, you know, at the time, I had just tried to write a first novel. I had been working on it for about 3 years. And it was a coming of age novel set in the 1970s in Montreal. And it never fully came together. It was quite broad and ambitious, and I really didn't have the tools to kind of make it happen. And so when that felt like it had failed in some way, I took about a year really wondering if I could do this, if I could write a novel and make it come together. And when I finally got to the nerve to do it, I sort of promised myself that I would bite off as much as I could chew, have a smaller story, and something more manageable, something quite interior that followed a single character. I thought a lot of books like The Days of Abandonment by Elena Ferrante or The Dry Heart by Natalia Ginsburg, these very intimate female narratives. And I thought, okay, maybe that I can do. Not as well as them, but I'll try. And so that was the kind of the formal inspiration. And then on the other hand, I also had always wanted to write a story about adult siblings and a complicated, enmeshed adult sibling relationship. As I started to actually write this story, I ended up being more interested in the female character, the sister, and she became the protagonist. And I also became more interested in her leaving the relationship with the brother, leaving her relationships behind and seeing what those relationships were like in absence, you know? So yeah, those are the kind of two poles. I wanted to find a shape that I could actually write, you know, that I could actually complete. And then also this interest in siblings, family dynamics, selfhood.
What is the story you're telling in Tides?
So very simply, it's really the story of a woman who leaves her life in the wake of a kind of personal tragedy. Interestingly enough, in the reviews, they kind of give away what happens to her, the catalyst for her leaving. But I think in many ways, the story is about this event that takes place, this sort of like very traumatic event that happens to her. But it is also about a woman who has always wanted to leave and see what it might be like to live a life not in the shadow of her relationships and the other people in her life. And yeah, to see what it would be like to start over.
What is the theme of Tides and how does it carry the plot?
Well, I think because it's such a kind of interior, intimate book, the themes of the book are the themes of the character's thoughts. You know, her memories, her obsessions, the language she uses, the images that keep kind of returning to her. And I think maybe most importantly, the major kind of fixation she has is on the story she's told herself about herself, and also the stories that, you know, those that she loves and the people around her have told about her and how those have shaped her, and trying to loosen herself from this kind of narrative of herself. Whether or not she's successful is, you know, another story.
May we listen to you read 4 minutes of passages from your book?
Sure. So the only thing really to know at this point, this is quite early in the book. The protagonist is as yet unnamed. She's left her family behind and she's in a seaside town at the end of the summer. She's living in a hostel and her money is starting to run out. It is hot, the hottest day yet, August slinking into September. Still hot by the evening when the sun is a red face dipping its chin into the water. The public beach is empty. Everyone is on their patios, sipping Campari and eating pistachios, saying their farewells. She removes her canvas shoes, her jeans and shirt, and moves into the water, sharp and cold as a knife's edge. She swims out until, when she turns her head, she can no longer make out her clothes bundled up on the sand, just a single line of darkness in the background. The water is bitter now, the moon just a sliver in the night, barely any comfort at all. She is that sliver, she thinks, drowning in the dark. She could die here, so slight and sinking, nothing but her body to buoy her up. Whatever reserves she had, she has lost them now. She feels a rush of heat around her, her own urine, terror at her own thoughts. She thrashes around, trying to turn back, but even this turning, this changing course, seems impossible. The body has forgotten how to lead. It takes an eternity to move against the current, the arms and legs dumb with disuse and then too much exertion. She kicks hard and then softer. It is easier this way, without trying at all. She is moving forward and back, lulled by the waves. She is like this forever until she hits something, a rock, and then her knees hit it too, and she finds that she can crawl. Beneath her, the hard, wet certainty of the ground. She manages to get to her feet, finds her clothes in their pile, falls asleep in a damp heap. She wakes before the sun and sits up, stiff and cold. She has always wanted this, to slip beneath the surface, to dispossess herself. Now that she has done it, it is hard to remember how herself could have become such a bottomless pit. Feed me, fuck me, fill me, love me. This is what it feels like to slip, she remembers telling her husband when she was teaching him to ice skate on the Ottawa Canal. You can't teach someone how to slip. He was right. You slip, and then you've slipped, and so you know. Sometimes she pictures them, her brother and his wife, discussing her now that she is gone. Impossible, that's what they would say. Or maybe instead, beyond repair. The management has moved her things. You were gone for 2 nights, they tell her. She can remember only one, but she doesn't want to fight. Her things include a toothbrush, a sweater, 2 t-shirts, 1 pair of jeans, the biography of a famous chef, all stuffed inside an old backpack with her brother's initials embroidered on it, PST. They have placed her in the large dormitory. She can tell from the work boots neatly lining the beds that the place is full of men. She buys a 6-pack of beer and some cigarettes and brings them with her to the beach. She will wait until the men are sleeping before climbing back into her cot. She lies down. The beer and cigarettes are effective. She feels herself drifting pleasantly into the night. Today, she has only eaten 1/2 packet of tea cookies and a banana. The waves are loud, brimming over, coursing to their violent meter. Before she falls asleep, she thinks, this is what babies must hear when they are held inside the womb.
What is the future for Tides? It's such a well-described novel. Have you considered television or cinematic media for your work?
I would love Tides to be a movie. I was really impressed recently with the adaptation of The Lost Daughter, you know, based on this Elena Ferrante book I love. So I could picture an adaptation of Tides that had a kind of sensitivity to the eerie internal atmosphere of the book. So Maggie Gyllenhaal, if you're listening, please get in touch. That would be great.
If our listeners want more information or to buy your book, where should they go?
Check out your local bookstore. I know Distill has a bunch of Tides copies and Drawn In Quarterly, hopefully, anywhere that you, local and independent, that you get your books.
Well, thank you for your interview today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Sarah Freeman speaking about Tides, Sarah's latest work. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
In the case of symptoms similar to those of COVID-19, such as fever, cough, sore throat, loss of taste, or smell, you should take a rapid home screening test. If you test positive, isolate yourself at home and please follow the self-isolation instructions. If you don't have a rapid home screening test, please self-isolate for the recommended period. Visit quebec.ca/self-isolating for complete instructions on how to protect yourself and others. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Early in the morning, before the sun rose, when the first bird sang, even while everyone was still asleep.
Morning. On that morning.
When the sun comes out.
This morning, baby.
Cock-a-doodle-doo. I hear the rooster crowing.
Now you must wake up.
Now every morning when I wake up,
I woke up this morning with
the kiss of the morning.
Got up 7:30 every morning. Had the same breakfast.
Réveillez-moi à 8h demain matin.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning. Riding a bike made of bacon and eggs.
In the morning.
In the morning.
In the morning.
Why should the sun reflect?
Has this ever happened to any of you, or will it happen to any of you, on the morning after the night before?
You are listening to The Morning After on CKUT 90.3 on the FM dial.
Midlife crisis at the Siegel Center? It's the shirt. After years of making you laugh on the interwebs, Jaime and Laser are coming to you live in the flesh, and not just for a one-night stand-up show either. Overflowing with their signature thought-provoking shtick and Heimish kibitzing, co-creators Jamie Elman and Eli Battalion are making their Siegel Theater subscription debut with comedy, music, video, and more surprises in a love letter to their hometown. With us today, we have Jamie Elman and Eli Battalion. Hi, Jamie and Eli, and welcome to the show.
Hello, hello. How does
hello,
it go,
Montreal?
First, please introduce yourselves and tell us how you came to be comedians.
I'm Ellie. This is Jamie on the other end of your ears. We have a history. We both grew up here in Montreal. We both pursue the arts, entertainment, aka fake news. We both have worked in theater, television, film, and this all percolated in the Midlife Crisis Project, which is basically a web series that evolved into other forms of film and things on television. And most importantly, for the purposes of this interview, live performance, which is what we're going to be doing. At least we're going to be live, and you are going to be watching it on demand, but we're live. And that's what we're going to be doing in our pandemic show coming up.
Where did the two of you meet, and how did your relationship form?
We went to the same high school here in Montreal, Bialik High School, but we are 4 years apart. We're not going to tell you which one of us is older. But like all good Montreal performers, we met up for the first time in Los Angeles. Don't remember when that was anymore, Ellie, maybe 15 years ago or something. But we have friends in common. We had heard about each other's work over the years and had always wanted to do something together. And so about more than seven years ago, we got a grant from the Jewish Community Foundation in Montreal to make something Jewish and artsy. And that is how we started the whole thing off with this grant. We made the first four episodes of our web series and really thought it was just going to be for us, for fun, a passion project. Became internet Jewish famous.
What is the most difficult part about being someone who speaks Yiddish?
I wouldn't know. I don't speak Yiddish. Ellie?
I think I speak Yiddish. I'm sure many people would criticize the quality of my Yiddish, and probably rightfully so, although I'm sure they're making mistakes too. The hardest part is not having a large enough world with which to speak the Yiddish. The Yiddish at one point, first of all, in Montreal, about 100 years ago, is the third most spoken language in this city. Believe it or not, there's been less and less people speaking it because, you know, there are other languages that are a little bit more relevant to the world, as you can imagine. So for those that do speak it, it becomes a little bit of a lonely or more isolated situation because you have no one to share the good jokes with. That having been said, that's why we're here as quasi slash not Yiddish speakers to try to learn some elements of the language, stimulate a bit of a revival, and bring it back for those that have a little bit of an appetite for it.
But, you know, Sheila, since we are well known in our obnoxiousness and chutzpah levels of self-promotion, since the point of the interview is indeed to get people to watch the show, we just want to quickly remind people that the show is entirely in English.
Because to Jamie's point, we don't actually speak Yiddish, so this was a lot easier. It was a lot easier for us to do our show entirely in English. And we also appreciate you letting us doing this interview in English. Thank you.
May we hear a clip of your comedy?
Sure. Here's a clip from the special we did last year. It was our Cheer Up special that's called A Call to Montreal. We shot it at the Siegel Center. This is some of the various characters that appeared in that production and who may very well reappear in our new show, Pandemish.
This is Yid Life Crisis on the Wednesday morning after.
We're here, of course, at the iconic
beloved Siegel Center, a place that is dear to our hearts. We've been coming here since we were just little pishers, seeing shows in English, en français, be'ivrit, avade in Yiddish.
We've heckled in all languages.
And furthermore, it was right here, on this very stage, 6 years ago, where we had the COVID.
Don't say that.
Sorry, where we had the honor of debuting our humble and self-proclaimed iconic Yiddish web series. Sorry, do you have a question, sir?
Your internet web podcast show is in Yiddish. The new, why Yiddish?
New, why not? Anyways, there's a lot to get to, so why don't we... Yeah, sir?
Yeah. Fatty or lean? Fatty or lean?
Very good. Very good.
Are we talking smoked meat?
Okay. I have an important question. Are you single? My niece has a wonderful personality. What's your phone number?
Yeah, 514-999-9999. Okay?
Nine.
I got a boy for him.
I have a question in the back. Okay, I actually have two questions, one big and one small, and also a follow-up question in advance. Thank you.
We should all laugh at ourselves, and if indeed there is a hell, let's all go together.
French.
Hallelujah.
In Hebrew.
Hallelujah.
In Yiddish.
Hallelujah.
And in English.
Why did you choose the subject of the pandemic for your current show?
What else is there to talk about? Ellie?
We obviously want to go for the funniest thing. So we just find viruses to be viral, quite frankly. So that's the origins of the comedic potential here. Look, the reality is that in our process, we've experienced the pandemic as individuals, but also as artists, and it's changed the way that we do things. A lot of things had to be more digital, as you can imagine. And so there are elements of that which are reflected in the show as well. And yeah, it's, to Jamie's point, kind of what's been affecting us as normal Joe Schmoes and as filmmakers and performers this whole time.
The longer answer is this, Sheila. 2 years ago, we were getting set to announce a new show for the Siegel Center that was not going to be about the pandemic because we hadn't heard of it yet. And then at the very last moment, the whole world shut down. We did not announce our new show, and it all just got put on the back burner. And then a year later, Lisa Rubin of the Siegel Center, an old and dear friend and supporter of ours and someone we really appreciate, came to us and said, guys, can you do a show for us as part of this season? It's going to be a tentative season. It's not going to be a full theater season. We're not going to get to do everything, but it's going to be a shortened one. But, you know, in the dead of winter, we're sure people are going to need a laugh. And we think by then people could be back in the theater. So can you guys come up with something to do then? And so when you ask, why did we do it about the pandemic? Well, it's because it was not exactly by commission, but because it's like it was created for this specific moment. And then about 3 weeks ago, or about a month before the show, it was set to open, the Quebec guidelines changed and we're not going to be allowed to have any audience in the theater. So we once again pivoted the word of the last 2 years and created the show Pandemish to be viewed online as an online special. And it can be seen by Montrealers and Montrealers all over the world and Yid Life fans around the ganze globe.
So again, how will COVID restrictions affect the show's presentation this year?
Well, that's what I'm saying. There's no audience.
None. It's all online.
No. Yeah, that I would say that's a major way that it's affected the performance. All 10 performances have been canceled. That's one way it affected it. And we're not allowed to have any audience in there. So that's how it affected it. We're doing the show as an online special now.
So when and where is the run and what do tickets cost?
The run is happening on the internet, that special venue called the internet. It will be available between January 27th, starting at 7 p.m., until midnight on January 31st. So you basically have 4 and a bit days to watch it. Tickets are, I believe, $18.36 for a household. And you can get them off of the Siegel Center website.
If our listeners want more information or to buy tickets, where should they go?
I don't know. Is the Orange Julep open?
I guess it's pretty ridiculous. They should go to the Siegel Center website, right?
But well said.
You never
well
know,
said.
Because a lot of these places, you know, a lot of these interesting arts and culture events run through Eventbrite and other ticketing organizations. So I ask to make sure we go to the right place.
Understood. We thank you for that. It is the Siegel Center website, in fact. Correct, Amundo.
Well, thank you for your interview today.
Thank you. Merci beaucoup. Schönen großen Dank.
You have been listening to Jamie and Ellie speaking about Yid Life Crisis, their comedy show. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
Venez prêter main forte à la campagne de vaccination contre la COVID-19. Nous recherchons des personnes pour administrer les vaccins, des préposés à l'entretien, des agents administratifs, des préposés à l'accueil et des agents de sécurité. Vous êtes étudiant, retraité, vaccinateur? Faites la différence et contribuez à améliorer la santé de la population en participant à cette opération d'envergure. Informez-vous et manifestez votre intérêt dès maintenant sur jecontribuecovid19.gouv.qc.ca. Un message du gouvernement du Québec.
Dark jazz samplings and poetic rhymes make up Johnny Blue's EP Until Then. Written by a more confident and charismatic Blue, Until Then has Johnny truly coming into his own as an artist. With us today, we have Johnny Blue. Hi, Johnny Blue, and welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you for having me.
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you came to be a musician.
I go by the name Johnny Blue. I'm a Toronto-based artist and producer. How I came to be a musician, really, it was just like a big part of my childhood. My dad loved music, and when he was growing up, he played trumpet and accordion. So when I was young, he wanted to get me into music, started playing the drums when I was 10 years old, continued taking lessons, taking music classes throughout school, learned how to play the saxophone in high school. And then once the classes ended, I kind of felt that I needed to continue pursuing music on my own. So I started learning how to produce on FL Studio in high school. And I was writing my own like terrible songs and raps since before I was drumming. So I just, the natural progression for me was to start making music for myself. And that's where that kind of took off. Probably like grade 11 or 12, I started seriously pursuing music.
Who has worked with you to make the Johnny Blue experience? And what does everyone player do?
Recently, I've been working with a gentleman named Pete Swan to record, mix and master the last two EPs I made. He's kind of like a man of many hats. He's a session musician, an engineer, producer. He does graphic design. He does like videos and promo, but I've really just been working with him to record my music. Aside from that, I frequently collaborate with a fellow artist from my hometown. He goes by the name of The Professor. So we've done like a couple tracks together, but in terms of actually making the music and writing the music, it's just been me up until this point. So I'm hoping to collaborate more often in the future, but yeah, that's about it.
You have released a brand new EP, Until Then. What is the story behind this album?
Until Then is a continuation of a project I released earlier this year called These Things Take Time. And they tie into each other, but they also heavily contrast each other in terms of like sonic profile and just their vibes. So whereas the first EP, These Things Take Time, was about like overcoming fear, it was about growth and honesty, vulnerability, starting out in a bad place, and then by the end of the project, I'm in better off. Like the first song of that's called Head in My Hands, and the last song is Brand New Heights. So the EP is kind of like a journey from a bad place to a better place. And then Until Then kind of picks up where that leaves off. And it's about stepping into your power and intending to stay there. It's about like holding it down, staying focused and staying determined on the path to success or wherever you're trying to get to.
What is the process you went through producing the song Freehand?
At the time I was working in a warehouse with one of my best friends, Tyler, and we would work like 10-hour days and then I'd come home and just work on music. These Things Take Time was probably halfway done. And at the time, Until Then was pretty much just an idea, but I knew what kind of atmosphere and vibe I wanted to root the project in. I knew I wanted like gritty, dark, eerie, jazz influenced, but also rooted in hip hop and simplified kind of minimal production that was still like potent and effective. So Freehand was one of the first beats that I knew I was going to use on the project after I made it, despite basically having nothing fleshed out yet. So that track, along with Eyes on the Prize, became like the backbone for the sonic like aesthetic of the EP. And then once I had the beat, I knew I had it to write something that sounded like the way the music made me feel. And it made me feel like confident and aggressive and like on another level. So the lyrics were definitely inspired by the beat.
May we listen to some of your music?
Yeah, absolutely.
This is Freehand on the Wednesday Morning After.
Yo. Fuck it, I might spark a spliff, smoke it if the day's slow. Watch me bag him standing still. I never chase hoes. I've been chasing dollars, euros, dinero, and pesos. Demons lurking over shoulders, turn around and face those. You've been batting out your league, posing, wearing fake clothes. Passing on the beaten path, never mind what they chose. We don't move the same, we sure don't have the same goals. Different strokes, different folks, something how the same goes. Lots to say behind their back, but man to man, your face froze. Whoa, I know that poodles like to bark a lot. Pussies like to talk a lot. I get aggressive over territory like an ocelot. I'm not breaking even if you drop me like an Otterbox. Make decisions caught between a rock and a harder spot. They want to see you make it. They don't really care how far you got. Used to pull the car up after dark up in the parking lot. Yeah. These paint-by-numbers motherfuckers couldn't understand the freehand. They compromised the art for mass appeal so they could see bands. Shallow cowards too scared to tread in the deep end. They take the easy way out when self-doubt seeps in. Psh. These paint-by-numbers motherfuckers couldn't understand the freehand. Ah. These paint-by-numbers motherfuckers. Ah. It's the blue Donnie, I don't stay caught in my feelings. I just acknowledge my problems, always try to reveal them. Express my emotions, no longer try to conceal them. I've been blessed, I've been floating and barging through all the sea lands. Your crew's too used to losing, get you some real friends. A few screws loose when you move and I get the feeling they got something to prove, but I'm aloof, I don't feel them. I make the ground shake, the earthquake, I make steel bend. Chef the hottest flavors, make opponents wanna steal them. Always get the point across with letters when I sign and seal them. Yeah. These paint-by-numbers motherfuckers couldn't understand the freehand. They compromised the art for mass appeal so they could see bands. Shallow cowards too scared to tread in the deep end. They take the easy way out when self-doubt seeps in. These paint-by-numbers motherfuckers couldn't understand the freehand. These paint by numbers, motherfuckers. Ah.
Eyes on the Prize is the first song off your album. What is the story behind this song?
Yeah, so Eyes on the Prize, first track on the EP, as you said. I really wanted this track to set the tone for the rest of the EP, kind of preface all the themes and just the vibe of the project itself. So I took a step back and sort of asked myself when I was writing, what part of my experience and my journey am I trying to communicate with this project and this song? So basically, like, If These Things Take Time was about, like, accepting yourself and overcoming fear and finding the courage to embark on this journey or go down this route, then Until Then is about pushing forward and keeping it moving, staying rooted and focused on the path. So Eyes on the Prize really is just encompasses that theme.
May we hear some more of your music?
For sure. Let's go.
This is Eyes on the Prize on CKUT.
Nobody's adjacent. Patience, yeah, these things take time. Until then, I go for mine so that one day I could shine. I'm in pursuit of a good life with a couple of good fellas. I try not to get caught in the rain without my umbrella. And dollars solve a couple problems. They say it's lonely at the top, and company's abundant at the bottom.
where the fuck I want him is where I got him. They want to see the other side of Johnny, so I brought him. I fly through them highs, stumbled through the lows, but kept my eyes on the prize. Yeah, fly through them highs, stumbled through the lows, but kept my eyes on the prize. Yo, read my foes before I play them like some notes on a staff. Heard that blues been calculated, but they don't know the math. No, they don't know the half of it. The vision's immaculate. I've been smithing the battleship, filling it with battalions. So the efforts are valiant. There's no stopping this paladin. A champion with the cause, dented armor and flaws. No stranger to taking losses or victories and applause. A toast to the gods who see through all our facades. A toast to my dogs who always be on their jobs. A toast to my pops, he showed me how to go hard. So I grind in the dark, got my eyes on the prize while I strive for the stars. I fly through them highs, stumbled through the lows, but kept my eyes on the prize. Yo. Fly through them highs, stumbled through the lows, but kept my eyes on the prize. Yeah.
If our listeners want some free listening time or to buy your music, where should they go?
Johnny Blues on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon. Whatever streaming platform you use, I'm on there. So if you wanna check me out, any of the streaming platforms you use, I'll be on there. Don Johnny Blue on Instagram and TikTok, Twitter, if you'd like to connect or follow along a little more closely.
Well, thank you for your interview today.
No problem. I really appreciate you having me on the show. Thank you.
You have been listening to Johnny Blue speaking about his music. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
This is Democracy Now!
He was surrounded by people who told him to wait until a more convenient time and to use more agreeable methods. 59 years later, it's the same old song and dance from Senator Manchin and Sinema. But my father did not let up for a moment, and neither have we.
The family of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. led a voting rights march Monday to mark Martin Luther King Day as pressure grows on Democratic Senators Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema to support changing the filibuster rules to pass voting rights legislation. We'll speak with Bishop William Barber, then to Texas, where an armed gunman took four hostages, including a rabbi, at a synagogue Saturday, sparking an 11-hour standoff. Three hostages escaped. One was released before police shot dead the gunman. We'll speak to a rabbi in Dallas.
This weekend was a sobering reminder that we can never forget and never ignore the presence and reality of anti-Semitism. But we also can't forget that when one faith community is attacked, all faith communities are attacked.
And we'll look at the case of Dr. Afia Siddiqui, an imprisoned MIT Brandeis-trained Pakistani neuroscientist who's serving 86-year sentence at a federal prison in Texas. During Saturday's synagogue standoff, the armed gunman repeatedly called for her release.